and I welcome you back to another session of Zero Point Radio. It's Sunday morning here in New Zealand, 10 to 12 o'clock in Eastern Time. It's Saturday 4 to 6 every second week, Zero Point Radio. I invite listeners to have a look at my website at www.zeropoint.ca. And within the week, I'll be putting up a new schedule of the lectures I'll be giving through New Zealand over the next 2 weeks, beginning next weekend. So if we have listeners from New Zealand, I invite you to have a look at my website and see my schedule, and I'll be speaking at the Theosophical Societies throughout the North Island of New Zealand over the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then I'll be returning to Canada after almost 5 months in New Zealand. I'll be returning to Canada on March 7th. Okay, so Zero Point Radio, my interest is in mystical, spiritual, psychology, and science. Through this program, I'm trying to elaborate some of my understanding of what I would call the mysteries of human consciousness and human existence, and then at the same time to try to understand the world situation and the world in which we're living, to wake up to the realities of what's happening in our society. My background is in clinical and forensic psychology, so I'm concerned about the awakening of humankind, not only on different levels of awakening, in a sense. Like in the mystical teachings, it's taught we have to know self. So what is this self we are supposed to know? And what is that self that people ordinarily think that they know? Like knowing your name and where you live and what things you like and dislike and your personality. So how is yourself different from your personality? So the mystics say there is a deeper level to self than what we ordinarily know of ourselves, of our personality. We have to uncover this deep mystery within ourselves. And this mystery has to do with the fact that we are multidimensional beings, and the life force and consciousness within us in a way emerges from higher dimensions. So we are not simply the material body living a material life with no soul or spirit. Instead, we have a divine spiritual and soul nature, and that living entity is brought down into the body. It's the life principle within the body. So the soul is kind of connected to the heart. And in this teaching, we try to understand the mysteries of consciousness, of human consciousness, are related to the heart. And your essential self is within the heart, whereas the personality and the ego are centered more in the mind, in the head. So in the esoteric tradition, what we have to do is, in self-realization, is to awaken to the condition of the heart and the consciousness of the heart. So in the body, I argue in my writing, in my discussions on consciousness, that firstly, human consciousness is not produced by the human brain in the head. Instead, it emerges out of the higher dimensional physics of the heart. And that's the manner in which higher dimensional forces are brought down and bring life into the material body. But we are multidimensional beings, and there are possibilities of afterlives and other lives, and there are evidences for all kinds of psychical phenomena that support this general notion that we're multidimensional beings. So through the Zero Point Radio, I tried to explain aspects of the heart doctrine, the idea of the self within the heart. I talk about the concept of zero point centers, that within the heart there's this zero point center down at within the quantum vacuum at Planckian lengths. We have a deep center within us connected to the heart. And our essential self is within the heart rather than being produced by the mind in the head. So I also look at the physics of creation, the creation of the universe from a zero-point singularity condition, 10 to the minus 33 centimeters. That's the Planckian length, the idea that our whole huge universe emerged from a point. Well, I'm suggesting that human beings similarly have such a point within the higher dimensions of their own heart. Within the heart is said to be the bliss sheath, the size of a small grape. And if our consciousness resides in that bliss sheath, then we experience the inner nectar or taste of blissfulness or ecstasy inherent to the soul. We can be illuminated by this light of the heart. So mystics, from a mystical perspective, there's a whole higher dimensional metaphysics to the human heart. People simply haven't understood what the human heart is. And as a quantum system, a human being's center is the heart, because the electromagnetic volume of the heart is 5,000 times that of the mind in the head. So the heart, as in a scientific perspective, the heart is the center of the human holographic quantum system to the electromagnetics of the human being. And we are all... Blavatsky explains in The Secret Doctrine that all the laws of physics and science are due to variations on one fundamental cosmic electricity. She calls it Fohat, is the term she calls it. And all the laws of physics, she says, are seven variations on the energies of this Fohat. Okay, so we explore widely mystical spiritual teachings, and then been my interest through my life for 25 years or so, 30 years, and then more recently woke up more to the world situation. And so often in the program, we not only explore mystical teachings about consciousness and the self and creation physics, but we also try to address those contemporary issues of what's happening now in our society. In a very practical sense, people have to wake up to what is currently happening within our societies because of the seriousness of the problem and how, I guess for me in my life, a year and a half ago after watching the movie Loose Change, I woke up to the fact, wow, those attacks on New York, they weren't done by the Muslim Arab terrorists, and this whole thing's been a fraud. Like, I woke up to that fact, and then the implications of that, to kind of see how our governments are implicated, and they hide the truth from the public about it, and then how the police forces and intelligence forces have become corrupted, and then looking at the corporations and their kind of schemes behind closed doors to bring about the North American Union and the one world government, and you begin to see all these things being done, and the masses of humanity intentionally dumbed down and fed misinformation and propaganda through the media. The whole thing is quite mind. So I had such a shock about a year and a half, 2 years ago, to kind of wake up to kind of realizing all the criminality throughout our society. It's like we're run by crime bosses almost. And so many people have become complicit in hiding up the truth of 9/11 and the truth of the wars and the truth of the inoculations and chemtrails and poisons in our food and the schemes of the elites. The public are completely deceived about all these things. As a forensic psychologist, it's kind of, I've worked in prisons for 11 years, and through that whole time, I'd say I would only think that I met two or three sociopaths or psychopaths through that period. And the most people in the prisons, at least at the provincial level, tended to come from backgrounds of abuse and drug, alcohol exposure to that, and unhappy family lives, and so on and so forth. But in many ways, most had hearts in a way, and they weren't. They more were struggling in their lives and unhappy in their lives, but they were just kind of regular people who had had a hard time. They weren't really sociopaths or psychopaths. Sociopaths or psychopaths can be like totally chronic liars. Everything they say is a lie and confabulation, and they will take advantage of other people who are naive, who other people wouldn't imagine those things, but psychopaths would do that. They have this kind of ultimate cunning and deception about them. They, in a way, they lack heart. They have no heart. The elites that rule our world, they have no hearts for regular people. Like the fact that they would want to poison people in different ways and reduce the population and withhold scientific advances from the population. All the things that are done intentionally, these people, in a way, have no heart. In a way, they sell their souls, and they all become an instrument of some kind of higher-dimensional, multi-dimensional being that kind of lives through and possesses them in a certain way in their soul life. So these soulless psychopaths happen to have concocted this kind of fanciful, completely criminal, corrupted media, corporate government system that kind of rules the human race, the sheeple, the sheep people who are completely deceived and kept busy in their lives and can't remember anything for 15 seconds. So they can't remember, they can't grasp the whole of what has been done in our society. And yet now these truths are kind of emerging throughout the world and people are beginning to wake up to what's been going on. I went to videogoogle.com the other day, and I looked what was the most commonly playing movie was this movie Zeitgeist, which is an excellent movie, and it begins with kind of analysis of 9/11, kind of showing it was an inside job, and then it goes into the background of Christianity and Judaism, and then it goes into the kind of it goes into the history of the wars and the Federal Reserve System and the kind of finances of Western civilization and the kind of structure of power in our society. And it's shocking. It's shocking. Like humankind never had a chance. all the kind of deceit and unnecessary destruction and war industries and attempts at like ideas about eugenics and mass extinctions and poisons and all these things. That these things are being done all through human history. And we today live in a very dangerous time where this is kind of all might come to a head and we might face fairly cataclysmic things because the corruption of these world elites is becoming more and more widely known. So they're more likely to stage another terrorist act so they can carry forward their imposition of a police state and the persecution of people and carry on their kind of neo-Nazi agenda. I mean, these people have built concentration camps around the United States and are all getting ready to bring in martial law and allow for the triumph of these international criminal psychopaths. So human beings, and they've done so many devious things through time in terms of developing all kinds of deviant technologies and spying on everybody and creating a kind of imaginary war of Osama bin Laden via like Santa Claus as this kind of external character who they got to protect us against. Well, the whole time we've just been deceived because the people we need protection against are the people offering to protect us. So we're in a pretty serious situation, the human family, and there's growing opposition in the States through the Ron Paul, who's an astonishing candidate for the presidency of the United States, who would bring about fundamental changes within the society and kind of reestablish the sovereignty of the states. And most Canadians have no idea that their government's been engaged in criminal racketeering with the corporate elite in order to sell out Canadian people. I mean, people don't realize these things. So we're in a pretty kind of serious situation. And our RCMP and so on, they protect and hide the criminals. That's what they do. Because they've become, and that's not what most officers want to do, you know. Just like in the military, how the military people have been deceived. All the Canadian soldiers have been deceived about 9/11, and why are they going to Afghanistan? They're deceived about the whole history of it. They don't grasp it. So it's like our young men and women go into the police and the army and the intelligence services, and they become all tied up in this network of criminality that's kind of taken control over these public, what are supposed to be public servants. There's a whole hidden agenda in our society. What we thought was a democratic society, we're realizing, was a hoax the whole time. Both parties are owned by the same influences. So in Canada and the United States, a pretty serious situation, and it seems in the United States it's a growing revolution of people kind of who want to take back the American dream and who still believe in the Constitution of the United States. Similarly in Canada and Mexico, there are movements of people who are waking up to what's happening in their society and want to resist this kind of psychopathic behavior of the corporate elites and the multinationals. These people do want everybody to have a chip inside you, and they can fluoridate your water and spray you with chemtrails and do any kind of criminal things and have complete immunity from any kind of law or sane logic. They even bring about their own self-destruction at the same time, because the people who do these things, they breathe the same air. You know, their children breathe the same air. They become complicit in the whole thing. So anyway, for myself, over the last year and a half, it's kind of waking up to this awful, awful situation of humanity and realizing the importance that we try to spread the truth about what's happened and is happening in our society at this point. The importance of alternative media and people turning off the TV set, complaining to your radio stations and your TV stations and newspapers. You know, all the media have become so complicit in the schemes of the elite, it's really quite disgraceful. Really, everybody should be reading the Nuremberg decision. You know, complicity in crime and you know, what you should have known. And it's not just an excuse to say you're always just doing your job or you're afraid. That's not simply an excuse that you ought to have known. So we need a whole society that kind of needs to stand down from this emerging pattern of criminality and undo this terrible kind of situation that's evolved in the world at this point in human history. So many people feel between 2008 and 2012 there's going to be some major transition within our society. Even astrologically, we saw Pluto enter the constellation of Capricorn, which I would suggest, and I understand other people suggest, disruption and chaos, especially in terms of the establishment system. So it is this kind of period of kind of human awakening to what's going on throughout the world in terms of the criminality of the world's governments and subsequently the bringing about of a new age. Imagine if we really had justice in the world. Imagine if really the people who committed 9/11 really faced prosecution and investigation for their crimes. Imagine. Imagine that, what that would mean. Imagine if people woke up to the complicity of the media. The media would have to be taken control again by the people, for the people. Not as a method of propaganda, but as something to serve the people in a democratic society. Canadian democracy has been stolen from people the whole time they've been asleep to it, as has American democracy. So humankind is in a pretty sad situation. So it's nice to realize, in a way, that like we're these multi-dimensional beings. And indeed, what we might be facing now on this earth might be similar to things we faced as a human species at other periods in our history. Maybe we were the souls that incarnated in Atlantis or other periods. Many empires have fallen. I remember a poem about Ozymandias, and in this poem, some person is reading the title under a statue, which is in the desert, and it's covered with sand, and it says, "Whoever looks upon this statue, you should despair because of the might of this emperor person." And here he was, the sands of time. He was reduced to rubble in the desert. But at one point, there was some great empire, and everybody kind of thinks their empire is impermanent. But throughout history, there's been the falling apart and the diminution of different empires. Anyway, we face an empire today, and I guess in our lives, I tend at times to see life as if it's like Lord of the Rings, that we have this huge, epic story unfolding on the world stage of the forces of light on the one hand of the people want to know the truth and bring the truth out, versus the forces of evil, who ultimately have been ruled by satanic orders through human history and societies and so on. There really have been these kind of criminal satanic elites that have schemed many things for the poor sheeple of planet Earth, who are being led like sheep to slaughter, as Gurdjieff describes it. Anyway, so that's my just introduction about the show, and remind you, this is Zero Point Radio Show, and we have another hour and 40 minutes, and in the background I have co-host James Moffat, who I'll speak to in a moment, and then we have a guest today from the Canadian Action Party from Hull, Quebec, and I'll introduce that guest as well in a few minutes. Okay, Jim, how are you?
Oh, I was really okay until I started listening to you.
Yeah, it's a little overwhelming sometimes, eh?
I was sawing on my wrists here.
Very good.
I was sawing on my wrists. Just to put these things in perspective, I was thinking about this idea about this situation. I mean, frankly, I just don't see anything being special about 2008 to 2012. It's another 4 years. I mean, the times are bad, but I just don't see it. But I was thinking, like, in my own lifetime, I mean, in your lifetime, 1962, the world was on the brink of nuclear war, and came very close to during the Cuban Missile Crisis, 13 days in which if the American military had had their way and Kennedy had not overruled them, there would have been a nuclear war, there would have been an attack on the Cubans and on the Russians in Cuba and who else. Who knows where else, but it could have started World War III, and the human race might have been extinguished or decimated at the very least. So, there's always something to worry about. There's always something really bad to worry about, but that's the other side of things. It's like, we were both sort of active during the Reagan years in trying to as part of the anti-nuclear movement, and you know, the those are pretty scary times also, like in the late 70s, early 80s. So there's always that.
Yeah, no, I see it as I hope you're right. I hope I'm wrong, because I do see quite cataclysmic things happening over the next months and years. I really do, because I think the New World Order and these people are being exposed too much, and there's this wakening up of people. So I think it's coming to a climax, like, because I don't think people have ever had that knowledge. You know,
we didn't
kind of realize it. Sorry?
It just doesn't translate into anything. I mean, these guys are quite comfortable, the people that you're talking about. I mean, what percentage of the vote did Ron Paul get? Look who's running for president of the United States. I mean, Tweedledum and Tweedledee in terms of actually making substantive changes, I would say. Like, I mean...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, and like I say, like, look at Ron Paul. I mean, he didn't even get mentioned in most accounts. I started looking just to see if his name was even mentioned in the coverage of the primaries, and he very rarely even got any. There was never any mention of anything he said, except in one debate I heard. You know, there was some comment, and then the guy accused him, Huckabee accused him of being an agent of the Iranian president. this is propaganda.
That just shows the corruption of the media, and also the corruption, the voter fraud that's emerging, and that's available over the internet. I mean, I don't at all trust the voting process in the primaries in the states.
But voter fraud
been shown to be completely corrupted. So, and
voter fraud is as old as the hills. I mean, John Kennedy got elected on the dead vote in Illinois, delivered by the mafia and Richard Daley. You know, I mean, it's been going on since there was democracy.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst part of voter fraud is that these electronic machines, voting machines, are provided by a company which has strong ties to the Republican Party, and I mean, are completely untrustworthy. I mean, I think there's strong evidence that Bush stole the second election too. That if you look at the exit polls in Ohio and the actual vote, it just doesn't add up at all. And I mean, I would, you know, there's been accusations that there was fraud there, and I wouldn't doubt it at all. I mean, he was given the first election by his brother in the Supreme Court, and you know, the second one, well, more of the same as far as I can see. But
well, I think that the very fact of Ron Paul being there, he's played a huge role in waking people up and giving them an alternative vision. I mean, I heard him on CPAC last night talking to a conservative Republican group, and he said about being at the university the night before, and they had like 4,000 university students out to hear him. I mean, this Ron Paul phenomenon is huge. And now, if he doesn't get he will run as an independent, I'm sure, just to keep that going. I mean, I hope he takes it through the Republican convention, because then he gets his message across there, and then become an independent candidate and keep going. You know, and all these people who want to vote for Hillary and John McCain, all the, like the puppets, they can divide that vote, and Ron Paul could have a strong, strong presence then. Even though the voter fraud is such a problem.
Well,
I don't know. I'm rooting for Ron Paul in the States, and similarly, I'm rooting for the Canadian Action Party in Canada. And maybe we will move along and introduce the guest for today, who will be on with us for an hour or so. And this gentleman is from Hull, Quebec, and he represents the Canadian Action Party. And in fact, ran in the recent by-election in that district. This is Michael Saint-Ange. Hi, Michael. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah. Do you guys hear me all right?
Yeah.
good. Yeah, actually, I did run in a by-election not too long ago, but it was in Saint-Hyacinthe, not in Hull, Quebec. Yeah, which was actually quite a challenge, because it was 250 kilometers from Hull. Hull is right near Ottawa.
Oh, yeah.
being actually close to Montreal. And
I didn't realize that. That's good. Good made the effort and got out there and started waking people up.
Well, and it worked as well. For a town I believe that probably knew very little about the Canadian Action Party, to go out there and actually go to a debate and walk away with some students wanting to talk to me and who were actually really educated within the monetary system altogether. They really had their stuff together. So I was happy to see that. I also want to mention that, Christopher, that I really agree with a lot of what you're saying about 2012 awakening of the general population.
It's hugely important because we've been intentionally and systematically dumbed down through the propaganda of the media. I mean, it's been an intentional thing, and we see that in the complicity of the media from concealing the truth of things from the public in the United States and Canada. It's quite terrible to kind of see that broader corruption within our society.
Yeah, for a long time, our media has been controlled by the same corporations who are trying to sell us main products and services. So it's been, you can't really trust anything you hear on TV or anything like that. That's why I really like the internet, which has opened up a lot of avenues for people to really, really get the inside scoop as to what's happening on in the front of the new world order and the global elites and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
people can actually research it now.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Even though it opens us up all to being monitored and listed, we get to be classified on there.
Facebook.
Have your coding, your color coding. Sorry?
Well, just like on Facebook, a lot of people are joining up on that, and they blatantly say within the terms and conditions that they're selling off all your information. It's a great way for them to monitor you and monitor your purchases and family connections, friend connections.
Why don't you give us some introduction a little bit to the Canadian Action Party? Like, I've met Connie. Connie was on this radio show about 6 months ago last summer. We had her on once, and I guess that's one of the major platforms of the Canadian Action Party is wanting monetary review and for us to actively use the Bank of Canada to take back our own money system. Is that right?
Well, right from the beginning, that was in terms of even the title of the Canadian Action Party, in the abbreviation being CAP, as capping the debt, because from 1936, when the Bank of Canada was created, well, from that moment on, which was able to create and fund all sorts of programs for Canadians, right up until 1976, we borrowed money for very little interest, and at that time, I believe the national debt was at $18 billion. From that time,
One moment, Mike, as we go along. Okay, so the government of Canada during that period was borrowing money for very little interest. Now, let me get this straight. The government is borrowing the money from the banks, but it lets the banks create the money and print the money. Why is the Canadian government borrowing money at all? Why don't they print their own money and invest it in their own country?
Well, the government does print the money. But it's the system, or monetary system, which is basically that the cash that's printed means it's just a representation of actual currency. And so, sure, that's being printed by the Government of Canada. Coins are being printed by the Mint. But all money is created when it's borrowed within the Canadian system at the moment.
Could people of Canada actually borrow the money from the government and avoid the banks?
No, the purpose of banks, like for I would imagine for the longest time, is in terms of chartered banks, was to lend money to the general public. The Bank of Canada was lending money to the federal government and to the provinces.
And who owns the Bank of Canada? Is that the Canadian people?
Well, it's a public bank where all the shares are owned by the federal government. Therefore, it is a public bank.
Oh.
So we do own the bank. It's ours. It's owned by the people through the federal government.
So why are we having to pay interest on our own money, kind of?
Well, sometime in 1976, the chartered banks in Canada, I would imagine, were lobbying, stating that they could, you know, they were suffering monetarily, I believe the story goes. And the Prime Minister at that time, I think it was Trudeau, decided to change the policy of borrowing from the Bank of Canada to borrowing to chartered banks. Ever since that time, we've been borrowing money with interest, all money, from the general public to the federal government to the provinces. So everybody borrows with money. Therefore, that's what's causing the problem is if you have a system where all the money is being borrowed with interest, there's no new money to pay that interest. So you have to continuously borrow more money.
There has to be more borrowing.
Right, which I believe is half the reason why we have a war, a never-ending war with terrorists who can never surrender. It's a great way to continuously borrow more money. And eventually we won't be able to pay the interest.
The country more and more in debt. And, I mean, it's all this artificial creation of, like, jobs and money and for nothing, really. Like, there's nothing that provides anything, like, all the surveillance and all the police and all this, there's such a huge expenditure to the Canadian public.
Right. And it's all being borrowed and we're paying interest on it. Right now, although we are seeing the principal of the debt increasing, it will be, you know, future generations are really going to suffer. And we're seeing that happening in the U.S. with their trillion of dollars of debt. I don't really believe they'll be able to keep up. In terms of paying their interest on that debt, will have to happen.
Isn't most of the debt in the United States owned by like China, Saudi Arabia, and foreign countries? It's not actually owned
That's
by
right.
American banks, right? It's owned by foreigners.
Yeah. That's how it is in the U.S. But they also pay interest on their debt as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The wars have kind of bankrupt the nations, really.
I'd just like to ask, so what is the Canadian Action Party's policy on monetary policy? Like, what is your reply to that, your solution to that?
Well, potentially, there's a lot of solutions. I mean, we could go back to when the Bank of Canada was being used, you know, a lot more to create, I mean... It's difficult right now with NAFTA and a lot of things that are sort of in our way in order to spend the money. But the idea would be to go back to the Bank of Canada to lend perhaps not all the money to the federal government, but go to a system where we would borrow at least 50% of our money from the Bank of Canada at very low interest, if not zero, so that new money would be able to be created to pay off the debt in order to balance the national debt.
So in a way, the implications of what you're saying is that really private corporations own the Canadian government. Is that in a way that's the essence of what you're saying, right? Is that because the interest is paid to private corporations, really they have control of the Canadian economy and actually earn money in the Canadian economy because they quote unquote keep it going.
Yeah, same as oil companies and a lot of other companies
right.
that are in very powerful positions, where if they turn
right.
around and were to be like, okay, well, you know, we want this, they can really bribe the federal government.
Right.
And a politician, for sure. It's a nasty situation.
I mean, we kind of realize now that there is a secret or dark government behind the government, and in a way the government are these pawns, or they're the kind of public players, but the real forces are more constant and hidden from the Canadian public.
That's right. You can elect an official all you want. And I think truthfully, a lot of the people who do get elected when they first get into power as young politicians probably have the best intentions. But it doesn't take long, I don't believe, to get corrupted and be put in a position. Because if you accept campaign donations and different things from corporations or individuals that are in certain leadership positions or potentially elite, they can really bribe you.
They could really what?
Well, they could really bribe you.
Like, I look at, as an example, something like Harper's recent expenditure of $300 million Canadian taxpayer money to a company to give this Gardasil vaccination to the young girls of Eastern Canada. And I look at an event like that, and to me, that's like this vaccination has terrible reports coming out of the States of all kinds of adverse reactions. What it really provides in terms of protection is really very minimal, if at all, and it can cause, it's injecting live viral matter into the young women of Eastern Canada. So we got a prime minister who spends $300 million Canadian to inject a noxious agent into the young girls of Eastern Canada. Now, to me, that smells of criminal racketeering, that the pharmaceutical lobby has an influence over the government in a way to extract this money from the Canadian taxpayer and then to inject poisonous substances as part of their genocidal plans. I mean, isn't that a criminal racketeering?
Oh, I absolutely agree. The problem is that you have to follow the money trail, and it always leads back to the actual leaders, the bit of a shadow government, for example, because the corporations are what led to this. This is a money-making venture for some corporation to say that we're going to feed HPV vaccines to all these girls. And I hear now that they want to perhaps vaccinate boys now. And this is not it was never a really big problem. So why this major expense on this vaccine?
Yeah, and the whole time, the same people are those most likely, I think, to release toxic agents into our environment. Like, I mean, the government has all these secret programs of designing biological weapons and variations, mutations on these different flus and so on. So they've got this arsenal of chemical and biological weapons themselves. So they're kind of, I don't know. I mean, I think the whole thing of mercury and the vaccinations and the flu shots, I think the whole industry is totally corrupted and very serious problem to people. Just like the fluoridation of the water. Is your water fluoridated where you live, Michael?
I really wouldn't be able to say for sure.
It is.
You should find out. water is very serious.
No, it is. It is. I know it is. My brother lives
in Hull, Jim?
Yeah, in Hull it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Why would city governments and the government allow the population to be intentionally put fluoride, a toxic chemical, into their drinking water?
Because okay, they're telling them it's going to be good for their teeth.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's really superficial. And the evidence is for...
Well, it's not superficial, but it's a lie. if it actually worked, it would be one thing. But it doesn't work, and it's very dangerous in a variety of other ways. I mean, there's all sorts of things like that have occurred over the years. Are supposed to be good for you, which it was created because DuPont had all this fluoride that they wanted to get rid of, and they wanted to make some money on it, and ended up being a complete snow job, and people were. It became a part of public health policy, and nobody questioned it, which is amazing, actually, that this happened. But
Yeah,
there is a lot of discussion about it, though, now, at least we can say.
Yeah, well, it's...
Because I have been hearing about it a lot.
I was going to ask, Michael, when you ran for election, what was the primary focus of your campaign and your platform? What did you run on?
Well, tell you the truth, I was... since I was 250 kilometers away, it made it really difficult to have any real focus. What I was mainly at that time was the SPP, Security and Prosperity Partnership, because right during that election, there was the Montebello fire.
Oh, yeah.
So we had a lot of those fires put out, and but it's almost a message that's lost in Quebec, where I was running, it was mainly a separatist province, right, or a separatist riding.
Right.
So the way I was trying to explain it to them is that they need a Canada in order to separate. If we get into a North American Union, they can forget about being separated, because ourselves, as a nation, Canada would be integrated in such a way that they'd never be able to separate. So it's necessary to keep Canada and have an ability to have a referendum, because it's crucial. People need to be able to make those types of decisions. I'm not against Quebec per se separating if that's what the population wants to do.
Yeah,
and that was my main. Yeah, that was my main thing. And that's the thing with the Canadian Action Parties. We really do want to go towards a Swiss style of democracy where people would vote and have referendums on issues that would impact, like the SPP. I mean, that's what we're. I did want to bring this up. You know, we are having a protest on Parliament Hill.
Yeah, bring that up, please. The details and so
yeah,
no
problem,
Michael.
It's going to be February 16th, so in 1 week from now, on Saturday, it's going to be on Parliament Hill, and we have currently about four speakers confirmed. We have John Ogilvy of the Green Party. We have an ex-candidate for mayor, Jane, in the Ottawa area.
Scar?
Speaking. Pardon me?
Yeah. Jane Scar?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I believe
good.
So.
Yeah, good.
That's her. She,
activist.
Yeah, and she's going to be speaking at the event. We have also a few people who are talking about getting an NDP over there. Thing is, I don't want too many politicians, and I don't want necessarily a debate to take part on Parliament Hill, but that's going to be happening from about 1 o'clock till 4 o'clock. So it's looking like we should have a really good crowd out there.
Yeah,
getting lots of reply.
Yeah. I understand Ottawa now has a 9/11 truth group.
They do, and they've been taking part within the organizing of this protest as well. Mark Young, was a bit of the lead guy in starting the Ottawa 9/11 truth group. And was, I don't know if anybody's seen the video where he went to Jean Chrétien and actually gave him an Investigate 9/11 t-shirt. Yeah,
yeah.
So he's been helping out with the protest.
It was interesting hearing Alex Jones report on it, because I'm a faithful Alex Jones, www.prisonplanet.com listener. And his take on it was so naive, because, like, he wondered, will Chrétien becomes the next 9/11 truther? And then the next day they persist in trying to get him to respond to it, and he gets all irritated and frustrated. It's like, it's so naive to think Jean Chrétien doesn't know the truth of 9/11 and would be willing to kind of expose it like other public figures have. I thought it was so naive how he thought that.
Mark Young is a lot brighter than that, actually. I'm sure he just basically saw the humor of it get out there. Mark Young is not disillusioned by any means about Jean Chrétien knowing a lot more than what he's talking about. He was right there.
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't mean to be critical of Mark Young. It was brave of him to do it. This is the kind of common action we need to be taking. We need to have, like, groups of people going out and confronting these public figures about the truth of 9/11 and their lying to the Canadian public, and we need to take it to them like that. So that's excellent of Mark Young. That's the kind of activism we need. Like, put these people in the spotlight a little bit. Get them on YouTube, you know?
And you know, his reaction alone, really, basically, in every one of the cities, shows that he knows a little bit more than what he's leading on to. You know, he was part of the cover up from the beginning, I believe. Along, you know, the politicians. You know, to say that you're in on a cover up, I just want to clarify that. I want to say that in the way that if you're not asking the questions, you're not looking for a solution. And Canadians are, you know, been implementing and going along with it in terms of putting an anti-terrorism law and changing all sorts of policies and implementing bills like Bill C-35 and C-36 because of 9/11 that we ought to be asking more questions. And it's just and now it's going into an SPP, and it's we're just going right along with it. So the leaders a lot of times are where we've got to focus. That's why there's great that there's a Canadian Action Party, and the reason why I joined is because I realize that the source of the problem is at the leadership level. And I think a lot of people realize that too, and I really hope more people get behind the Canadian Action Party versus other groups, you know, who you can protest all you want, but somebody at the top needs to be the one who's going to make the real strong changes. That's why Ron Paul is such a great thing, and I really hope he does run as an independent as well.
Yeah,
you know,
Connie Vogel is a Canadian hero. I regard her. I mean, she's brave, I think, to carry the Canadian Action Party. I mean, what an excellent leader she is. I'm really impressed by her, and I'm on their mailing list. So the group, they send out, you know, information about fluoride in the water and the new attempts to limit your access to vitamins and health supplements and the inoculations. Like, that party, the Canadian Action Party, is taking up all these important issues, whereas the other parties are all complicit in hiding them.
Yeah, we actively try to lobby to get people to be more informed. You'll never see that in any other party, and that's what's great about a political party actually wanting their citizens to be informed and to make their decision based on an informed, you know, sort of investigated study, you know.
You know, it's very interesting that well, first of all, you were talking that Alex Jones was being naive when Kirchner, I believe, right, Chris, like not the activist,
not
but
asking it.
Yeah, but I think it's really fascinating that I don't know if either of you have seen this film documentary called Why We Fight.
No.
Have either of you seen it?
No, I haven't.
It's really quite extraordinary. It's highly recommended. It's a documentary that begins with Eisenhower's farewell address, in which he warns the American people about the power of the military-industrial complex. You know, and during the course of the film, they interview his son, and at one point, it's interesting because I've heard that speech many times, but his son starts talking, you know, about how Eisenhower said, you know, every tank we build, every plane we build, and he starts talking about this in terms of what it costs people. Like, you know, the cost of one fighter is like health insurance for, you know, millions of people. I mean, or the cost of a thousand fighters is, you know, I don't know, 10 hospitals or, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter, but the idea is basically that whenever people talk about taxes and what we can afford and what we can't afford, well, especially in the States where you have this mammoth commitment of financial resources to the military and to the corporations that build these things for the military and provide services to the military, really, you know, almost every social program, every health program, there's an abundance of money. Americans could have universal health care. They could have all sorts of poverty programs. They could all sorts of public health programs if they didn't spend all their money making people rich so that they could go around the world attacking people. I mean, it's that simple, you know. And yet this never enters into the discussion, you know. And then the other thing is, in any kind of political discussion, it's everything is so circumscribed in the way that people talk about the issues. The other thing is that I was reading David Ray Griffith's book on the 9/11 Commission, Omissions and Distortions, and I think that came out in 2004, 2005. It was after his book, the New Pearl Harbor, and in that, at the beginning, he cites polling data from various places in the United States, but also in Canada and in Europe, about how more than 50% of the population doesn't believe the official story of 9/11, and yet the whole war on terror is based on 9/11. The whole American foreign policy is based on 9/11, but nobody questions the basic premise. Nobody will, you know, if 50% of New Yorkers don't believe that the official story, why doesn't somebody talk about it? You know, it's amazing that, and this is where the internet is so valuable, is people should start demanding, you know, when these candidates speak, well, what do you think about 9/11? And don't just give us the usual BS. Like, what actually happened? I mean, everything's premised on this, and nobody wants to discuss it. It's like the elephant in the room, you know, like that nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah, that's perfect. The elephant in the room.
I think that's going to be one of the strong points for the Canadian Action Party. I think perhaps in the next election, should that topic come up, you know. We're the only ones who are willing to talk about that topic, and it's so crucial to understand that because for a lot of people, it's the gateway. It's the gateway to the what a lot of people have been sort of referring to as the rabbit hole. You start getting into 9/11, then you start realizing that there's groups that are more powerful than our elected officials, and you start looking that up. And that's all because of the internet.
Exactly.
And it's no surprise that we haven't seen it on the media. It's the media who are really into it. I don't like bringing it up, but it's the Illuminati.
Yeah. There's no doubt the existence of this group and that they are like it's real. It's people who say, "Oh, it's just conspiracy theory." It's not just theory. It's supported by all the facts and evidences. It's overwhelming body of evidences. It's true. People have to wake up and realize it's true that these conspiracy theories have been true all along. They did assassinate Kennedy. They did, you know, commit these different atrocities. They did blow up the Oklahoma City bombing. You know, they did do the London train bombings. You know, these people do these devious things within our society and deceive us through the media. I've just did a review of a series of videos available on YouTube, and the series is called September Clues, and it's an analysis of the media from the day of 9/11, and it shows through the pointing out of paradoxes and enigmas through the media analysis that the media, they concocted the images of the planes going into the second tower. They produced that within the studios. And they obscured what really happened in the original attacks. The media were complicit from the very beginning. They're owned by these same people.
Did you see the clip of the woman from BBC who is discussing about World Trade 7 coming down as it's standing right behind her?
Yeah.
She was reporting on the news even before it had actually gone down.
Yeah.
They forgot that it wouldn't be there when she was reporting it. Yeah, it was so funny.
So that really, really shows how, you know, the there was a corporate sort of entity. I don't like saying also that 9/11 was an inside job, because saying that 9/11 was an inside job is a bit like saying, you know, that the U.S. government was the one who did it, and I don't necessarily think that. The man who owned the World Trade Centers, I forget his name. Goldberg?
Silverberg. Silverberg.
Larry Silverberg. Yeah. Larry Silverberg, who owned these buildings, had a big liability on his hands because that building was full of asbestos. And what's the best way of getting rid of that building? I think he really just wanted to get rid of that building and took out a bunch of lives while he was at it. And he was such a well-connected man, made it happen. And the U.S. used it as... So I don't think the U.S. government planned it, but they did take advantage of it and saw the the advantages of such a Pearl Harbor type event?
Well, many people in the government are involved in it, if not directly setting it up, at least in hiding or obscuring the truth of it. Like, there's no doubt about it. But I agree,
oh, yeah.
It's not the government so much, it's these elements in the elites who are the shadow government. I mean, that's where these events are planned out, and you know, I mean, it's amazing. They even write about it in their own planning documents, saying they need a new Pearl Harbor. And
yeah, but I disagree with the idea that the government wasn't involved in it. They had to be involved in it, and the military had
to
be
involved. They were involved in covering it up.
Well, no, I would
covering it up.
I disagree. I think they planned it. You know, I think they were definitely involved in it, and not necessarily that they did it, but they let it happen at the very least. I think the fact that the American military didn't respond to planes flying into buildings tells you a lot right there. That somebody had to stand them down and somebody had to remove them, and the only people that could do that were in the military and in the government. I think there's mammoth questions, but I mean, we'll never really know until there's some sort of, you know, fair and open-minded inquiry into this. I think there should be an international commission to investigate this and to bring attention to it. Nobody believes it anywhere else in the world, you know? Like, I mean, that's the amazing thing. But you know, nobody really knows what happened. I mean, we know that it's been covered up, but we don't know what's been covered up, and that's kind of critical.
My big problem with 9/11 in terms of the U.S. government, and what really aside from standing down and all that, further the fact that they knew what was going on, and people up high were in the U.S. government were aware, is that when when they were first attacked, they had the same missions going on right across in Alaska, I believe. They were running missions simulating crashes into 9/11. You had it went for a long time that you know, I totally lost my train of thought. Sorry about that.
Anyway, just coming back, I think it's most important that the Canadian Action Party, Connie Fogel, knows that there has to be an inquiry into the truth of 9/11, because it is the basis on which the Canadian public supported our military involvement in Afghanistan and in NATO. And now the fact that the Canadian public has been intentionally deceived by their own government and the media and intelligence services is a pretty serious thing, because these services have all hidden the truth of this event, which means that they themselves are controlled by the same people who perpetrated the 9/11 attacks. I mean, that's the problem. And then we realize what a monster, what a beast has is upon us.
Right. For the 9/11 report, they didn't mention anything about additional explosives. And when you look at those buildings come down, and I think that's why a lot of people, logically, when they look at the 9/11 towers, don't think that it could have been two planes, because it really came down at the speed of gravity. And when you look at two buildings, it didn't fall down at all at the path of least resistance. It came straight down. Path of least resistance would have been down to the side, perhaps, but straight down on its own footprint. And for the 9/11 report to not mention any additional explosives raises a lot of questions.
It shows you that they're obviously complicit because of their lack of mentioning it and going into it. The evidence that the buildings were brought down by controlled explosions is overwhelming. It's undeniable. There's thousands of witnesses who were there. It's reported on the seismograph. You can see it on all the videos, the squibs. Like, the buildings don't fall down like that from little airplanes hitting them in the top 100 floors up. It just doesn't happen. Like, anyone who believes that the buildings fell because of the airplane, that person must believe in the existence of Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. I would put the all three in the same class. It's just unfeasible. There's no doubt that 9/11 done using explosive devices of some kind.
I think there's more evidence for Santa Claus's existence and for the fact that those towers fell down. And then the one that's really the kicker is World Trade Center Building 7, which Silverberg, you know, did that interview, and he said that's when the decision was made to pull the building, and he actually admitted to it, you know, that they actually brought it down. I mean, he actually admitted to it inadvertently, you know, but it had a minor, it had this little minor fire, which was nothing, you know, and yet this 47-story building comes down, you know. I mean, it's just, I guess one thing, I just saw Loose Change the other day, and just the sheer number of firefighters and people who were in the building who heard multiple explosions. I mean, it's sort of like the Kennedy assassination, you know, like 57 people in Dealey Plaza hear gunshots, smell smoke coming from the grassy knoll, and yet the Warren Commission says, "Oh no, there was no shots fired from the grassy knoll." You know, like, I mean, it's completely ludicrous. It's exactly the same thing in terms of the 9/11 report and the Warren Commission. You start out with a predetermined conclusion, which was arrived at like instantaneously, you know, before there's even any chance to analyze what happens. Oh, Lee Harvey Oswald did it. Oh, Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda did it. And then everything from that point on involves steering the so-called investigation towards finding what you've already concluded. I mean, it's ludicrous. The whole thing's a complete deception. And the only good thing about it is that it's such a transparent deception that anybody who looks at it with an open and critical mind has to believe that there's a conspiracy. There's no other choice. I mean, it's just ridiculous, you know?
I've heard
9/11 provided that evidence for us, like overwhelming evidence. Like that's what's so profound about the event is because if people wake up to that, it unravels. Like that's what Michael would say. That's the entrance to the rabbit hole. In a way, you begin to realize, oh, these criminal elements within our society did this. It wasn't the Arab Muslims. That was a deception. They've intentionally deceived us and staged this. And they've done this through history. You know, the incident that led to the Vietnam War and the Oklahoma City bombings and
about 9/11 is a lot of people have referred to it, I've heard it referred to as being the glitch in the Matrix. Because what it enabled was for people, because you know, when you look at all those other hits or false flags, is that people weren't aware, and it never went past that. But with 9/11, people were aware, and from that point, we've been started investigating, and the message has been getting out. I think that that's partly why, you know, within the next couple of years, 2008, 2012. We can really say that we're becoming more aware, generally speaking, when people are looking further into other things like fourth dimensions and interdimensional quantum physics and different things that people look into. And I think it's really great. We are becoming more aware, and it's because of, for a lot of people, events that happened on 9/11. People are really starting to look now.
Yeah, it's profound. I absolutely agree. It's the glitch in the matrix, as you described. It's this event that it's imperfection. They showed themselves to the world. That's what they've done. And so now people are beginning to grasp the depth of this. You know, what Eisenhower warned us about, what Kennedy warned us about, all these different people have been telling us, you know. We can hear David Rockefeller go to the media and thank the media for playing such an important role in deceiving the public. I mean, you know, these things are in books, and they've made this huge case against themselves. The evidence is there now, and people are grasping the larger spider, this larger kind of terrible thing that's upon us.
But the other side of it is, this is hardly unique. I mean, it's unique in terms of one thing, which is the internet and the technology to communicate is much, much better than it was, say, years ago. But, you know, 5 years after the Kennedy assassination, 71% of the American public didn't believe the Warren Commission. You know, I've been studying the Kennedy assassination for 45 years. And, you know, during the Vietnam War, there were all sorts of teach-ins on American campuses where people were educated as to the real history of what was happening in Vietnam and why the United States government was there. And it awakened people, and it eventually led to the end of the war. But realistically, there's all sorts of information that has exposed these people on a variety of levels, but it never translates into action. You get Ronald Reagan elected as president in 1980. You get George Bush stealing elections, in the 1990s. So, I mean, that's the other side of it is, yeah, there's more information out there, but the sources of disinformation and the sources of money and power are so strong that it's very difficult to make any kind of institutional change. I mean, you have to kind of think like guerrilla action, I guess, to fight these people because they're just so strong. You know, I mean, that's the problem. And people have like Gore Vidal says, it's the United States of amnesia. People have very, very, very short memories for anything. You know.
I like that, United States of amnesia. That's funny. That's so good.
I mean, it's the same with Canada, too.
One thing, Jim, you say, it never has led to them being revealed and people waking up to it. But I think that's why this event, it's the culmination. It's like, I believe, like the 100, you reach a critical mass where enough people are beginning to wake up and to realize the criminality of the government and what's being done. We have to reach that critical mass, and I think 9/11 is going to set off that critical mass.
Well,
and
it has a lot to do with the internet.
I mean, you say it never has made a difference, and I agree with that. It never has. But I'm saying I think in this event lies the seeds of it happening, and that's what's happening now, I believe. And it's going to force the New World Order, if they're either going to have to do some things themselves to carry their agenda forward, and I think they're likely to do that because I think it's coming unraveled a little bit. It's getting out of control that the people are learning too much. What do you think, Michael? I'll throw it over to you, let you have some space here.
Well, I just really sort of think that, that's why we have to really worry about net neutrality. You know, in terms of right now, people have access to all this information, and you have things like Wikipedia, and so we can go back on, you know, the JFKs and different things and relook and reinvestigate those issues, you know. So, yeah, it was easy to forget because at a certain time, it was harder to access that information. I mean, back in the 70s, you'd had to go to the library, look up the newspaper clippings. Today, the access to the information is so easy so that I worry with net neutrality, for the people who understand net neutrality, it'll really slow down the access of information for regular people like you and I. It'll be like a priority to the corporate websites and different things like that. And they'll show up first
That's a very dangerous threat. And also, I think I would encourage people to be making copies of things available on the internet, because at some point those may be, if it's brought down, then you have all those materials, and make DVDs and CDs and distribute them. But people should be taking this stuff off the internet and developing libraries of this to circulate and inform other people. I like that about the 9/11 Truth Movement, how they go out and they give out copies of Endgame or Loose Change.
Yeah.
Like, this is really important.
I was talking. I was talking to somebody in the coffee shop the other day, and he told me that Loose Change is going to be released as a theatrical release that'll be in theaters. Have you guys heard anything about that?
No, not at all.
That would be really neat.
Yeah, you're telling me. But
I think activist groups need to be having rent community centers and be showing up. I think this is one of the things we need to be doing, is kind of show these movies in a public forum and inviting different communities, rent community centers and start you know, have an evening where you watch Endgame and Loose Change one evening. And, you
actually,
know,
Christopher, we've been talking about exactly doing that in the Ottawa region for me and a couple of people. All we need is just a coffee shop that's willing to play along and advertise that. That would definitely catch on. I agree with you.
Or like we could go out. When I get back, I'm willing to do such projects with you. Let's go out and rent the Ottawa Library and put it on the Ottawa Library. We'll rent it and put it and show the movies. You know, let's.
That's the next idea.
9/11 truthers, I think, are likely to support and be involved in doing that. Yeah.
You can rent the theater in Ottawa at the National Archives. You know.
Oh yeah. Well, that would be a neat place to do it.
Yeah.
There's quite a few places actually in Ottawa. I've been learning over the last couple of months that if you want to set up something, you can have it done pretty cheaply as long as it's non-profit. You can get something really inexpensive. And I really suggest everybody in the Ottawa area like attend something like that or be looking to set up something like that themselves. What's good about 9/11 group, you know, in terms of them, is that at least this group we know is active. Because they go out and they're not willing, they're not, you know, just sitting on their couch like a lot of people researching the internet. It's all well and good to go on the internet, but you have to be seen.
Yeah, we need to take it out there more and more, I agree.
Yeah.
In terms of references, connecting JFK and assassination and 9/11, there's a guy who teaches at Berkeley. I don't know if he still teaches there. He's a former Canadian diplomat, and his name is Peter Dale Scott. Assassination researchers will know him. He wrote a book called Deep Politics and the JFK Assassination, in which he extensively documents the criminal connections between the drug industry and not the drug industry, but the drug smugglers and narcotics pushers in the United States and the American government and intelligence communities from the 60s through to the present time. Very interesting guy. He also has a piece, and I don't have the reference on the internet, but if you look up Peter Dale Scott, he has a speech that he gave. There's a text of it in which he compares the JFK assassination cover-up and the 9/11 cover-up. Very interesting material, and I highly recommend that people check him out. He's a very important voice, a very knowledgeable guy. He's been at this for a long time.
There are quite similarities in terms of the implication of the media and how they were involved in covering up the story. I've seen videos of the JFK and how they've really taken apart the videos. And you can really see how it really looks as though the whole vehicle is superimposed on a bit of a green screen, the way they sort of did it. It's just like video tricks, but basically makes it look as though the car sped up, although it slowed down. I've seen and it's the same thing with 9/11, how Christopher was saying earlier that they perhaps manipulated even the shot of the second plane hitting the second tower. So the media was involved in both those.
I mean, I'm not sure I believe that actually, definitely the Zapruder film was definitely doctored. It was, you know, it was sequestered. Time Life magazine had it for 5 years, and it was definitely doctored. There's no question about it. That was sort of the wild card in the whole JFK assassination, is that somebody was actually filming it, threw a monkey wrench into the whole framing of Oswald, because the timing, as established by the Zapruder film, just didn't add up to him being the sole shooter. That was the unfortunate part for the guys who plotted.
I wouldn't so simply dismiss the involvement of the media in 9/11. You have to watch this September Clues series. There's some evidence that's so compelling and obvious in the media's own coverage, and I'll
what
give
about
one
all
example
the,
of this.
What about all the it, people it, who saw a second plane fly into the building?
Well, I'm not saying there wasn't a missile into the second building, but,
no, what,
but
they,
I think
they
it dropped
missile,
down from above. So,
no, but they saw a plane fly into the building. I mean, I don't
well,
believe... I don't believe a
person. All of the witnesses, the main ones on the day, were all involved with the media. They were all TV people, almost
no,
all
there
of
was,
them.
No, there's thousands of people in the streets that came out of the buildings. I mean, there are all sorts of people in the streets that saw the second plane hit the building.
I've seen the videos you're talking about, Christopher, as well, and I actually had went and, because I had quite a media a library of videos from 9/11, and from those clips, it didn't match the originals. Tell you the truth, it really looks as though in that video where they're trying to show, it sort of goes black. The plane will hit the tower, screen goes black, and then continues, which was trying to say that the media had altered the video when the plane hit the towers. But all the other clips that I've seen of the second towers, the second tower being hit, the screen didn't go black. So I'm not too sure about that, but although I do say that if they can alter the JFK video, they can certainly alter today with our technology the video of towers being hit. It could go either way.
I would put out there, watch this series September Clues and look at the evidence before, and it's an amazing series. It's 8 parts. Each about 8 to 10 minutes, and it analyzes various aspects. But let's leave 9/11 aside and come back to Canadian Action Party. I guess there's a possibility of an election in Canada, possibly over the next year, and I guess it's a federal party, and I guess now has candidates in quite a few areas, like 50, 60 or more precincts or electoral.
Yeah, we have probably about 50 or 60 and a lot more unconfirmed candidates that we're still waiting on replies for. If we can just even get the just the Canadian Action Party on the ballot, I would be a really good thing in a lot of the ridings. But we might actually even get an election sooner than we think. The story goes right now we might get one in the next few weeks, or it might be called within the next few weeks, therefore an election sometime in April. It would be a pretty good time for the Canadian Action Party because of the 9/11 groups and all that. If we even just focus on that one topic, I think we could get ourselves a good percentage of the vote, I think.
I think... you know, one thing, the other thing about the Canadian Action Party, specifically related to the Canadian military's presence in Afghanistan, is that all you have to do is really examine the history of what's happened in Afghanistan in the last 25, 30 years, and it just exposed this completely ludicrous idea that the Western countries are over there fighting because they're concerned about the Taliban. They're concerned with the Taliban occurred directly after the Taliban decided that they weren't going to support Unocal's building of the pipeline from Central Asia to transport gas and oil. I mean, that's basically what the opposition of the Taliban started. You know, it's in Fahrenheit 9/11 where the Taliban were in Texas, you know, to meet and greet with American officials. Nobody had any objection to them when they thought that they were going to support the Americans building a pipeline to transport oil and gas. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, this whole thing about bringing democracy to Afghanistan is a complete and utter joke. I mean, it's got nothing to do with that. It's all about money. I mean, it's all about gas and oil and money, plain and simple. And I'd like people, like, you know, the Canadian public in general does not favor our presence there. And our government is the main reason why we stay there. And hopefully these issues could be raised and pointed out to people is that, you know, that this is a complete waste of Canadian lives to go over there and fight there.
Yeah. And there's a huge cost as well to sending young men out. Like, you know, a government will spend a certain amount of money, for example, educating someone, putting them through school, and will subsidize college, for example, and do other things. When you take a person and you send them out, it's a loss in terms of a financial aspect. But also, you know, this is such an unsubstantiated war that it will never end. because of course you'll never capture one person and have them surrender. This is an eternal war. So you know, the Canadian Action Party is being, you know, their position, I think, on 9/11, or sorry, not 9/11, the Afghanistan war, is that we ought to be going back to a peacekeeping role, change that, and withdraw those troops immediately. Leave the mess to the Americans. This has nothing to do with us. You guys still there?
I'm still here, Chris. Are you there, Chris?
We might have lost him a while back.
We may have lost Christopher.
Are we still on the air, though?
Oh, yeah, we're still on. Yeah, I presume we are. Getting a little bit of echo here. I don't know how it is at your end, Michael.
It was pretty bad earlier, but I'm okay now.
Okay, well, I can hear you very well. So what other, are there other concerns or major issues that the Canadian Action Party has as part of its platform or is going to emphasize in the coming election?
I really don't know what direction we're going to be taking for this next election. I mean, right now, we're working hard, I know, here in Ottawa on setting up perhaps like an electoral district. We're doing a lot of things to really just help us finance the next election. In terms of policies, we have so many really important topics under our belt in terms of monetary policy. I know that within my last election, when I was invited to the debate in Saint-Hyacinthe, the NDP was there, Green and the Bloc, and a lot of the questions that I found that people were interested in often revolved around money and the lack thereof. So, you know, I find a lot of times within an election, we end up talking a lot about the Bank of Canada. The other policies are all really logical in terms of environment. I think that's probably going to be a big one. We don't right now have a policy on climate change, so there's going to be some discussion to try to get a policy in place before the next election on climate change. We hope we're going to have something in place for that, because that's obviously something that's very important. And I can tell you a lot of the problems in terms of the environment could be solved by releasing certain patents that are being held in terms of engines that won't run on water. A lot of people are talking about that. That is a reality. There's also the possibility of pulling energy from the ionosphere, which would be another way of getting free energy. But the problem is that corporations aren't really allowing us to do that. So I think that's a big problem, but I think people need to be made aware that the technology is out there. So there are definitely solutions to the environment, so that's going to be a big one, I think.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you talk about engines that run on water, because a few weeks ago we had Jonathan Eisen on, puts out a magazine called Uncensored in New Zealand and investigates all sorts of stories. He's an American journalist who moved to New Zealand, I think, many years ago. But I found a book by him with a collection of his pieces on a variety of topics, and one of them was about engines that run on water. It was very interesting that, you know, saying that this technology has existed and has been patented in a couple of different places, and yet, you know, there's nothing that that's come of this. I mean,
the inventors are dropping dead.
Yeah.
the one big one that I know is Stephen Meyer, who's you can look him up pretty easily on the internet, and you can see that he was interviewed on the radio or on TV, and he shows a little bit of how his engine works. I mean, potentially, what he would do is he would take a bit of a barrel of water, put in some electrodes within the water, run just about enough electricity, or as much electricity as it would take to run a radio, through the electrodes, which would separate the oxygen from the hydrogen being lighter than the oxygen, would rise, and then you would light that. So, and all you would get out of that as a byproduct would be water. So that seemed to be something that was very interesting, and there's apparently somebody in India who's come up with the same thing as well.
Very interesting, huh?
Yeah. And it's something that's coming out a lot more right now, but it's hard until we actually see something that's concrete to know whether or not something like that was actually possible. But if we can get our hands on the patent, or the release of the patent, that could change the world. And apparently what was interesting about this water he invented was a water dune buggy. And if we can get our hands on that, it would be a whole new world for sure for everybody. Apparently, water with or salt water even works even better because it increases the conductivity of the water.
Oh yeah, lots
of
that.
We have a whole lot of that around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting because several years ago I had invested some money in a alternative energy engine, and these guys actually got patents on the engine, and then the guy who had introduced me to the project disappeared. I think he died, but he used to be my accountant, and I've tried to find out what happened to the engine. I have no idea what happened to the engine. I know that they had been able to patent it, which in and of itself, you know, it spoke volumes, is that you can't just get a patent on an engine, and it was a clean operating engine, and I'm kind of wondering, well, what happened to this alternative technology? You know, I mean, I hope that they didn't die too, but because seemed to have such promise. You know, that was a Canadian invention. It was a guy at the University of Toronto, a former professor at the University of Toronto, who had worked on this for like 20 years, and had taken something that somebody had started like in the 1920s, and then he had further developed it, and actually had developed it to the point where he had been able to receive three patents in Canada and the United States. As I say, I don't really know what's happened to it. So if you guys are ready,
another form of energy that I find is very interesting, and I was looking that up through researching Nikola Tesla. You ever heard of him?
Yeah. Oh yes. Yeah.
The story with him is that he had built a tower that was able to pull unlimited amounts of energy from the ionosphere. So, you can get energy from the sun, you can get energy from the wind, but here we had a contraption that could pull unlimited amounts of energy from the ionosphere. And he stated that if he were to put strategically towers around the world, he could transmit this energy wirelessly around the world. And this is not just a technology that would change the U.S. or Canada, for example. This is something that would change the world, of course. And only the problem was that he was being funded by J.P. Morgan. And J.P. Morgan wanted to use this for profit, and he wanted to use it for the betterment of man, and also found that this technology, if used improperly, could also be used to focus the world's ionosphere into one point, which would be like a lightning bolt, 1,000 times stronger than any other lightning bolt. So he didn't want it to be used as a weapon. But potentially, the technology is there, and it's limitless.
Yeah, I mean, people don't know Tesla invented the coil that bears his name, and that gives us alternating current rather than direct current for it. But he also had a very interesting idea that he believed that he could develop the same kind of thing, like wireless transmission of using the Earth's standing wave as a source of energy that could be tapped into, and basically you could just build relay stations which would transmit electricity from the Earth itself. And I don't know what ever became of that in terms of if anybody's ever actually developed that. But again, you know, a very clean, efficient, and totally renewable energy source in the sense that, you know, the Earth's standing wave isn't going anywhere.
And invented in the 1920s.
Yeah,
you know,
and
that's important, too, because it's not something that was invented, you know, in the 80s. We're talking about something that was invented almost 100 years ago now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we've moved bounds beyond that now. So therefore, the government, you know, could potentially hold a lot of information that could change. You know, the thing is like just like the electric vehicle that came out in California, the EV1. Now, the EV1 failed just because it basically signified the end of oil companies. It was a fun car. It was fast. No more oil changes. Didn't require gasoline. And wasn't apparently all that expensive to build. So, you know, and the only reason that didn't succeed, and we've had electric cars for over 100 years too, or if not more, actually 150 years, and yet we keep using this non-renewable energy source to power all our vehicles. It's ridiculous, but it's only for because of the one big oil tycoon who started it all, and I think that's Rockefeller.
Yeah, you know, it was funny, but earlier when you were talking about following money, and I'm thinking, you know, there's a line in the movie about Watergate, All the President's Men, when Deep Throat, who was the FBI agent who was actually directing Woodward and Bernstein, at least in the official story, there's some question about that too, but at one point, they're trying to put together the what was going on with the whole Nixon conspiracy against the Democratic candidates, and Deep Throat says to Woodward, follow the money. And, you know, I don't know if Deep Throat actually said that in real life or if that was just in the screenplay of the movie, but if you follow that rule, follow the money in understanding anything, you won't go very far wrong, you know? Like, I mean, it always boils down to who benefits and who benefits economically from whatever's being done, if you really want to get to the truth of things, you know? Cut through all the superficial cover stories and the BS that people, you know, to dress things up and just look at who, you know, follow the money. Who's getting richer at this? And you'll never be mistaken, you know, like, because if people just operate on that basic motive level all the time.
That's why right now, I mean, I'm fighting really hard against the Security and Prosperity Partnership, because to head back to that sort of topic, I mean, the SPP is an obvious sort of agreement that's pointing, you know, I mean, you have three leaders and 10 corporations from each government having access to our politicians. Like during the Montebello demonstration, there were no other elected politicians other than Bush, Harper, and Calderon. There was nobody else there except for these 10 corporations talking behind closed doors with no media. Anything could have been discussed, and the problem is that we can't get our hands on this SPP document without it being completely doctored. So, you know, that's the main problem. You know, corporations, I think, as defined within the Constitution is nothing more than a citizen. So why do these citizens have access to the SPP and our politicians when we as born Canadians don't have that right, or we can't get our hands on this document? It's a secret sort of society that's almost being created right there through the SPP. I mean, this is an elite sort of agreement. It's bull, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
do you know a lot about the SPP yourself?
No, I don't, and that's what I was just going to ask you. Maybe you could just elaborate a little bit on what the nature of the agreement is and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, potentially the SPP. Okay, to like basically say very simply, and I don't want to say it too much because it's been said so much, is that it's an agreement that was signed on in May 2005 by Prime Minister Martin at the time, Bush, and President Fox. And it's basically going to touch on all sorts of things that we take for granted in terms of health, transportation, food, agriculture, environment, energy, the movement of goods. Now, the people who are going to be deciding these new policies aren't elected officials. It's going to be people like... when I'm looking down the list of corporations, we have people like Home Depot, Scotia Bank, this is in Canada, Bell Canada, CN, Manulife, insurance companies, and in the U.S., people like Gillette, Whirlpool, Walmart, Ford, New York Life. Now, these are the people who are going to be deciding these new regulations for health. Now, when you talk, when Stephen Harper was speaking at the SDP summit, when he spoke publicly, he compared what he's, well, he, or he basically said that, you know, we were going to be standardizing the deli bean. Now, that's slightly insulting because to say that you're going to be standardizing the deli bean, it's so much more. It's all the food we eat. It's the vaccines we take. It's a million and one things that are going to affect our daily lives. And we can't know what's going to happen ahead of time. We talk like in terms of transportation. I mean, we're coming out with no-fly lists, which are unconstitutional, for example, because we should have the right to access whether or not our names are going to be on the no-fly list. We should be able to have the right to privacy so that our government is sharing our information with the airlines so that they can prevent us from get boarding the plane. And we should have the right to freedom of movement. So if you're on this list as a born Canadian, you don't have the right to move even outside your country. So this is just early byproducts of the SPP, and it could mean a lot more. Now, if we look in the U.S., they just approved cloned meat. If you're going to approve cloned meat in the U.S., and we're going to be standardizing ourselves, that means that it's approved in the U.S., it's automatically approved in Canada, and therefore the trade can be faster, smoother. It's always going to be like that. So I don't want to lower my standards to those of the Mexicans or the Americans, because Canadians have historically had the best standards in terms of food, agriculture, medicine. So,
yeah, and I guess that fits in with the idea, like under NAFTA, where you basically reduce everything in terms of protection and standards to the lowest common denominator, because if one country has a higher standard, that's seen as an unfair subsidy. Is that kind of the idea, that really what they're trying to do is lower every protection against for consumers and do away with any kind of government regulation? Is that the idea?
I guess it's not going to be necessarily to do with all government regulations, but it's going to be superseded by these other sort of policies that are being implemented through the SPP, a lot like NAFTA. So like it goes above and beyond Canadian law. For example, like Chapter 11 of NAFTA makes it so that international corporations can sue the Canadian government for loss of revenue due to a change in policy or something, which has happened before. Canadians would the government would implement a law to, for example, take I forget what the name was, the chemical in gasoline. And when they did that, this corporation lost money and turned around and sued the Canadian government for any sort of losses. I think it was in the billions of dollars. Canadian government lost the lawsuit, and the chemical stayed in gasoline. But that's NAFTA. For SPP, it's a little bit the same. I mean, it's going to be these corporations just making the laws and policy changes. The idea of like taking the lowest standard is basically because if they take our standards, for example, Canadian standards, and implement it through Mexico in the U.S., it would cost more money. Standards and policy, or you know, or higher standards cost just equal dollar signs to a corporation.
So we can look forward to those outstanding environmental standards that apply in Mexico, where people are have all sorts of unbelievably grotesque health problems because of the lax environmental laws?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very disturbing,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. It is. And it's yeah. a lot like NAFTA, where we're getting into it, but we're not going to see the real impacts of it for years to come. And that's when we're going to turn around and say, oh, well, you know, that was maybe a bad idea, but it's going to be too late. That's why we basically want to stop it and get a referendum, because it impacts so many different aspects of our daily lives that we really got to at least put it to the vote of the general public rather than this minority government that we have in power at the moment. And that's not really representative. I mean, they didn't have a majority government and shouldn't be making such changes that are going to be long-term.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's kind of akin to it's kind of akin to Bush, you know, that, I mean, after the first election in which he didn't even win, in which he was basically awarded by the Supreme Court of the United States, he acted as if he was, you know, as if he just, you know, won, like, this incredible majority and he had this mandate and just sort of went ahead and made all these radical changes. And Harper, the same way, you know, it's like the guy barely squeaks in. He's in a minority position and really hasn't received a mandate from the majority of the Canadian public, and yet, you know, he acts as if, you know, he's got like a 70% plurality or something. It's quite
yeah, and that's a great way to manipulate public opinion. You know, as you walk around as though everybody loves you, and you know you take statistics and you make them sound great. You know, in just all the statistics that are in your favor, for example, and you make the general public. That's what you advertise. You make the general public think that everybody really likes you. And that's what Bush is doing, and that's what Harper's doing. It's basically trying to pretend like everybody likes you because it really does affect public opinion.
Yeah.
It's a maneuver.
Yeah. Very disturbing. I have no idea what happened to our host here, but he seems to have dropped right out of the picture. It's like, Chris, I don't know if you're there, if you try phoning back, if you want to get back on here before we wind up, the direct line, I'm just going to give this out to Chris so that he may not know the number, is 530-876-3222. You can phone that direct line, I hope, and perhaps get back on the air here before we wind up. Was there anything else, Michael, that you'd like to say before we got about 10 minutes left here. Was there anything else another topic that you'd like to broach or something you'd like to say by way of summing up?
Well, just real quick, I just want to, again, remind everybody that there's going to be a protest. We're going to be protesting the SPP, asking for a referendum on Parliament Hill February 16th, and that's Saturday. And I want everybody to attend who's interested.
Yeah, that's great.
That's the only thing I want to say.
I'm back in here, Michael and Jim. Sorry, I got cut out for a while.
Oh, okay.
You noticed.
Yeah. But you've carried on. That's good. So you were just describing the upcoming event, Michael, and then will you be running for the CAP party in the next election?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
In what area?
In the Ottawa-Vanier riding. We already have a candidate in Ottawa Center, so I'm going to be doing Ottawa Vanier, and we're going to try to set up an electoral riding association before the next election, so that we can have.
Yeah, I saw that. I'll gladly support you when I come back to your area. At one point, I was considering running in the Nepean Carlton area for the CAP. So when I come back, I may take that up. But even if I don't decide to run in that area, then I'll work with you and your local people.
Well, we definitely need somebody who's who's going to be a strong figure, because I would really, really like to have a president within our EDA that's going to be able to think big and be a really good leader, and that's what we're lacking right now. I have a lot of people who are interested in being the vice president, or hold other positions within the body, but we need a president to make it official. And once we have a president within this electoral district association, then we can start raising money legally year-round to try to fund a campaign. And it would be so detrimental, especially in the Ottawa area.
Yeah, can that one committee serve for several areas, electoral areas, or is it one per area?
So it would be one per area.
Yeah.
One per area, one per district. And what they do is they nominate a candidate, and they support that candidate year-round. But basically by getting donations, and when it comes to elections time, they can go out and fund different advertisements posters and stuff like that, that it's kind of hard for a candidate to pull together that sort of money just within the time of an election.
Yeah, candidates definitely need need that kind of support, like what you're talking of. I mean, you can't just do it by yourself. I mean, we do need to organize at this community level and establish these kinds of bodies. And then to take a role publicly in both, I think, confronting other politicians and business leaders about what's going on, as well as educating people by offering seminars and public showings of movies and such.
Yep.
I think this is very important. I'm glad to hear you have a 9/11 truth group in the Ottawa area.
For sure, and you're going to be joining us for when you get back into Canada?
Yeah, I definitely will be. Yes.
Good.
I'll
make sure to have a sign ready for you.
Again?
I said, we'll make sure to have a sign ready for you.
Okay. Yeah, I have different ideas about directions to try to get some activism going. Yeah, good. Thanks for coming on the show today. I don't know how we're doing for time. Do we have 5 or 10 minutes left?
I think we have about eight or nine minutes.
Good. And anything else you wanted to come back to, Michael, or would like to have gone into? Yeah.
No, go ahead, Chris. I think we talked about everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jim, anything you wanted to kind of bring in or comment? Sorry, I kind of came back into your conversation, so I had missed the stream of what you've been discussing.
Yeah, well, we were talking a little bit about Tesla and some political things, but I mentioned Jonathan Eisen's book, our guest from a few weeks ago, and I just wanted to give out the title if people want to look at this. It's a very interesting book. It's called Suppressed Inventions and Other Discoveries by Jonathan Eisen, E-I-S-E-N. And then the subtitle is True Stories of Suppression, Scientific Cover-Ups, Misinformation, and Brilliant Breakthroughs. Very interesting book, right? A wide variety of topics, covered everything from cancer cure suppressed and alternative energy technologies to UFOs. And it's quite an intriguing collection, and I would highly recommend it to people.
And people might also visit John's website. John lives in New Zealand, and he is a publisher of Uncensored magazine, which has material on everything from fluoride to 9/11 to chemtrails to the satanic elite and so on. It's a remarkable high-gloss magazine produced in Australia. In New Zealand. And mainly distributed here in New Zealand, and it's just the kind of information you can't get much better, and you can't find such material in Canada. Canada had one excellent publication, I think it was called Global Outlook,
in a
magazine format. I think that's still around. That's also an excellent publication.
Yeah, if you're interested in 9/11, Global Outlook is very interesting publication, and comes out, I don't know, maybe like quarterly or something. That's Barry Zwicker of Vision TV in Canada, a veteran Canadian journalist, puts that out. And he has a very good book on 9/11, too, which called Towers of Deception, which also includes a very good DVD, which he produced for Vision Television, which I highly recommend. He's very good on talking about the media, too, because he's a veteran media person himself, he's very good.
Yeah. Well, that's good that that's still active. So, Michael, I wonder, do you know the CAP has do they have people running across Canada and in most of the electoral areas?
Potentially just about throughout Canada we'll have somebody somewhere. The only province that we don't have anybody actually is in Manitoba. I think it's one of the only provinces that don't have anybody. Potentially we are lacking in Canada, there's no doubt. I don't know what to say. Unfortunately, we're still just breaking the ice, and a lot of people are just starting to learn about the Canadian Action Party and Connie Fogel. So
yeah.
We have, last time I spoke with head office, in the area of 200 candidates. Now, there's 308 ridings in Canada. And
oh,
we
yeah.
have somewhere along the lines of 200 candidates plus. But we're still waiting on them to sign some of the papers and get that in there. But once once those candidates come through with that, we'll certainly have a nice group of candidates throughout Canada. But we're you know, there's still none of it.
I think Connie Fogel is to Canada what Ron Paul is to the United States, and I see your party in that role, that they would bring out the truth of these events and deal, you know, we have to roll back EP. You know, it's been so unfair to the people of Canada, United States, and Mexico that the government, working with corporate elites, would scheme this pact, which really undermines the sovereignty of all three countries and keeping the people, willingly, intentionally keeping the people deceived as to what's involved in the SPP. I mean, it's really quite disgraceful. So
well,
I think hopefully as people wake up more, they'll flood to the CAP or bring about changes in other parties. Like, I would vote for anyone who would talk of 9/11 truth, no matter what party they were in. You know, but my judgment is that all the Canadian political parties have been corrupted in that way, and now they're all involved in this complicity of silence. And it's really quite terrible because it makes them all guilty of conspiracy to cover up the truth of 9/11 and the mass murder of Canadians on that day as well as other people. So we have so many people who have become complicit in the machinations of the beast that are coming at this time. Well, I hope we'll be able to have you back again, Michael, and I look forward when I get back to Canada to meeting you personally again. I think we met briefly once out at this other group, the Council of
Canadians. Ottawa Stop the SPP Committee.
The SPP, Stop the SPP. Yeah. And I'm glad that we have someone out there trying to bring truth forward and organizing locally. So good luck.
Well, you're doing a great job too, Christopher, with this show. Good that you're talking about a lot of these important topics.
Great.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll have you back again. And
sure.
Good luck with your demonstration on upcoming. What was the dates finally again in Parliament Hill in Ottawa?
It's next Saturday. It's next Saturday, on the 16th.
Yeah, I hope we get thousands out there.
Oh, I hope so too. Everybody's talking about it within their own little groups, so hopefully we will have a good turnout.
Yeah.
Good luck,
yeah,
Michael.
Thanks.
Okay, so Jim, I guess we're down to a couple minutes now. I forgot my watch upstairs when I got cut out. What time is it there, Jim?
2 minutes to the hour.
Okay, so any final comments you wanted to have?
Try to remember yourself always and everywhere. It lightens the load sometimes. You know, it's these are very disturbing things, a lot of very disturbing people out there, and, you know, open your heart and try to let the light in, I guess, is, you know, you have to be pure of heart, and you have to try to see the light in things, I guess, and that doesn't mean turning your head away from the bad parts, but, you know, you have to try to remember that on some level, this is all an illusion.
Yeah, and... Mark Cummings, physicist, he talks about having courage, and he says courage actually comes from the French, and it suggests having a new heart. So
right.
I think we all have to try to have courage in a way to face this. But at least we're trying to know the truth and speak in truth, and I do see this information war is just so important. You know, we have to get the truth out into the, break the spell of the corporate media and corporate lies, break the spell of that upon Canadians and Americans and Mexicans and the people around the world. And in here lies the seeds of the real new world, not a new world disorder under criminal psychopaths, but really a world of justice and where there could be abundance for all if we didn't have such a criminal wastage of money and control of the taxpayers and so on. We could have had a wonderful world with abundance for all if we hadn't gone down this path of craziness into this new world disorder. So anyway, I would encourage people, you can visit www.zeropoint.ca. This is Christopher Holmes, mystic scientist, forensic psychologist. I'd like to thank James Moffat, coming from Toronto, co-host. Jim, I may not be available the next show, so we'll have to discuss that.
Okay.
And I'd like